Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namaste Girirajaya, Shri Govardhana Namine, Ashesha Klesha Nashaya, Paramananda Daine,
Hare Krishna. Today we will start our lecture series or our seminar, which is meant to be an educational or training seminar to usher us into a new practice which we might not have known before. It combines meditations with the speech with words and physical activity, that is the paying of obeisances. Vandanam, or the process of praying, as we will learn tomorrow in great detail, involves wholehearted praying. Pour your heart out to the one to whom you pray. Call with a voice which trembles with urgency, like a child which calls for the mother. And show by your physical expression that you mean what you say. And you have the three, mind, speech and body, in a wholesome devotional experience. The problem of a modern devotee is the problem of a modern man, a scattered life, where there are gaps between what he believes and what he does, where there are gaps between his actual spiritual experience and what he wishes to experience, and where there is the chronical problem of, let us say it in polite English, an absent-mindedness, or let us say it in the sometimes rough ISKCON language, spaced outness. This is a problem. When our body and our words do one thing and our mind is in another mindset or is somewhere else, a great problem which could be described the mild beginning of a little touch of schizophrenia starts. See, if I do something consistently, but my mind is really not with it, it's a problem. I'm scattered. For instance, if I read, and my mind is simply not with the eye movements and with the processing of letters, I will become bored, and I will become tired and fall asleep over my book. When I'm with a person and we're interacting, but my mind is not with it, I will, like it happens to my older god brothers, who are often, when in our discussions, not there with the mind, they will ask, "What did you just say?" I said, "Prabhu, this is the third time I'm explaining the point. And if you, for the fourth time, will ask me what I just explained, I will leave our discussion. You can stay here and I'm somewhere else." You must be present with your mind. Otherwise, it's impolite or schizophrenic. So, in a spiritual life, or in the spiritual practice which we will now learn, we will bring our body, our speech, and our mind together and have a powerful experience, if we do have the blessings of our guru, which is that something hidden will open before us. At the moment when you are in your Krishna consciousness, present with your body, with your words, and with your mind, an explosion takes part, or a revelation takes part. You will chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and all of a sudden you will think, this is spiritual, this is Krishna. You will actually see Krishna's form and think of his qualities like his mercy and so on. So Sanatana Goswami teaches us to counteract this problem of the modern man and of the modern spiritualist, that is the scatteredness, where he's not together, not concentrated, and therefore not able to make a spiritual experience which is rewarding. By teaching us a process of meditation and declaration and physical movement. I'm calling it now like this. So I would like in the beginning today enter this practice in a mild form, which is also for a beginner accessible. And in the following days, I will go to deeper and deeper levels, and I will see how deep we can go by looking into your faces, how alert you are, how much you are with the practice, and how much you can actually relish and get out of it. I wanted to start with text 236 and then go with you through a meditation. We will also say things, and we will at the end offer obeisances. Now, before doing this, I have to give you a theoretical understanding the way how you can offer obeisances in this class. You can choose between four types of obeisances. One is the old man and old woman obeisances, obeisances which I often do. Two are very suitable for worship. They are for the it's a little bit more vigorous. And the fourth is a very relaxed, I would say, American type of obeisances, which is totally acceptable. Let me start with abhivadana, respectful greetings. This is an obeisance. It involves saying things like nama, or touching the person's feet whom you are respecting. Abhivadana, or respectful greetings, could also mean that you give your introduction. My dear sir, I'm so-and-so, and I offer you my respect. Huh? So, abhivadana is something like a respectful greetings. You could also fold both of your hands and take on a respectful attitude by approaching the personality whom you're offering obeisances in these ways. The second and third type of obeisances is called Ashtanga Pranam or Panchanga Pranam. They are very much known in our movement because we do them all the time. Ashtanga means to bow down with eight limbs of your body. Your feet should touch the earth, the hands, and everything between this. That is the knees, the chest, the head, your sight. You should look at the floor, in other words. your voice should touch the floor. You know, that is the lips and mouth. And most important, your mind should touch the floor. This is called an Ashtanga Pranam, involving the eight limbs of the body. This is usually done by men when they are very much moved, because the physical phenomenology or shape of the woman body might be disturbed when she lies with her chest on the ground. So Matajis and also men take mostly to the Panchanga Pranam, that is bowing down with five limbs. That is the hands, the knees, the head, the voice, and the mind. Please note that in both of these obeisances, it's always the mind which has been has to bow down also. Bowing down or offering respect is not a physical activity, in other words, but it is a mental activity. And many Vaishnav scriptures say, as we bow down with our mind, what do? We start to meditate. That's what we do. And touch in our meditational body the lotus feet of the personality to whom we are bowing down. When, for instance, you bow down to Radha Shyam Sunda in the Krishna Balaram temple, you can raise with your mind out of your body and touch the lotus feet of Radha Shyam Sunda on the altar. Or you bow down to a person whom you respect, you go with your mind and touch his lotus feet. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur brought this process of offering obeisances or offering respects into the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. When he said like this, you should chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and touch the beads, and while you touch the beads, you should in your mind meditate that you are touching the toes of Lord Gauranga. Try that for enlivening the tired heart. Hare Krishna. Gaura, Gaura. Oh my, what will I? Hare Krishna. It works wonder. We must awake the tired heart. And this is one process. Offering obeisances, even while chanting, by bringing the mind to the practice, which bows down and touches the lotus feet of the worshipable object. There's a fourth type of obeisances. It's called Karashira Samyoga. It means raising one's hands to one's head as a simple salute. It looks wonderful, isn't it, Javi? It has a sweetness to it. Would you like to try this? You can hear... Some of you look as if you carry a pot of water. So this is a type of obeisances. You go like... In all obeisances, there is an underlying psychological effect. The self-asserting ego has to go down and bow down in order to end its material activity. For instance, if I bow down in the Panchanga Pranam,
you know, like this, yeah.
It does mean that this mind, which is not useful for spiritual life, I mean this mind which always accepts and then rejects things and analyzes and criticizes and paralyzes itself, that goes down and the heart rises above the mind. In bhakti, it is the heart which rules. In material life, it's the mind which rules. Let this be changed. Let the heart rise to devotional feelings and that the mind begin to become a disciple of devotional feelings. So this is one type of underlying psychology in the obeisances. In the pranam, you actually do something which helps you to come to a devotional experience. I would like to dwell a little on this because this is not so much known in our Western thinking. But there is a great, great effect of posture on mood, on mind. I always say this in my japa workshops, and some of you might have heard it and already. There was once a very distressed man which came like this to a sadhu and began to pour out his heart. Oh, my wife left me, my children are not respectful, the rupees were stolen and the monkeys urinated into my food, and so on. He complained. While really looking dejected like this. So instead of answering, the sadhu took on the same posture, stayed like this for 2 minutes. In India we have time. And then smilingly explained, "It works! I also become depressed." You will see in your life, when you learn to have a posture where you don't look as if 20,000 years have attacked you and bowed you down. If you look like this, if you have your mind content will be different. Whereas when you are like this, the ordinary Hare Krishna person who visits lecture, sits like a potato, your mind will scream and say, "Overload, I can't hear any longer, it's too much for me." You will not be alert, you will not be attentive. Posture has such an influence on our mind. It's a yoga principle. Therefore, I always tell this in my japa workshop. Vedanta Sutra says, prayer and meditation can best be done when sitting upright, because your mind will be more joyful, more alert, more with it. Your organs won't be squeezed. They will be at the natural place. Your stomach will not be pressed into your intestines, which are full with digestive juices. No. You will be aligned. You will be there. Therefore, obeisances are very do have a physical benefit if you so want, but mostly a mental benefit, because in obeisances the heart or the devotional feelings rule over the analytical mind. I do remember my father, who is somewhat of an analytical person, when he saw me for the first time offering my obeisances to Tulasi Devi, it happened to be. He said, son, I can't understand you. The way I know you, you never bow down to anyone. Even in the dancing school where you learned good German behavior and manners, you wouldn't learn the traditional greetings. You would just nod your head as quick as possible and bring it up again. I can't understand. Now you bring everything down. The whole body comes to the knees and your head touches the ground. And I said, Father, it's good for the ego to do this. It helps you to really get into a devotional mood. Posture, in other words, helps us to develop a mood. That is one point, but the previous point is, the point which I want to now raise is more important. When you do obeisances and you speak while you do obeisances, you declare something, you pray something, you say a prayer, something very wonderful happens with your consciousness. The consciousness shifts all of a sudden. The Goswamis of Vrindavan did this all the time. Sankhya Purva Kanama Gana Natibi. They would actually physically offer obeisances, and while doing this, chant different stavas, Radhika stavas, Radha Kodashtakams, and so on and so forth. Because if you bow down and you start to now also bring the speech into action, you speak, something very powerful, two very powerful practices are combined with spiritual activity, physical practices and declaration. The mind says something, and it will shift your consciousness on another level. The Padma Purana talks about this effect in a shloka, which I want to read to you. Comes from the Uttara Kanda, 226th. It must be a chapter and 41st verse. Ahankriti makarasyan nakarastan nishedakah tasmatu namasakshetri svatantyam pratisit. It talks about the word namas or obeisances, which always come in, which is used in Sanatana Goswami's work as the most frequent word which he uses. This nama means something. The syllable ma indicates false ego, which is negated by the syllable na. Thus, by offering obeisances and declaring nama or namas, one denies his independence as the possessor of his material body. You know what Prabhupada said in his lecture. This, the thought, kataham iti manyate, I'm the doer, I'm the body, and I'm doing things here as my body. No, this will go. You will actually become cleansed of this independent ego by chanting the word namas or namaste or namaha. Huh? This is what it does. But of course, if you do it thoughtless, like most of the Hare Krishnas, then not much will happen. You must bring your mind to the practice. Mind and speech, very important. Not mindless speech. So this is some of the theory. Let me summarize it, because I went fast through it. There are four types of obeisances. Abhivadana, respectful greetings, where you use words like nama, touch the feet of the person, introducing yourself, sir, I'm so and so, and I offer you my respect. This first type of obeisances. You can offer ashtanga pranams, bowing down with eight limbs, or panchanga pranams, five limbs. Or Karashira Samyoga, where you raise your hands to your head, or, I mean, I have seen this very often, raise it to the heart like this. That's also acceptable. Doing something with the heads. That's the first information which you have learned. The second information which we have talked today is how obeisances have an immediate effect on our feelings, posture, really influences our feelings. My dear devotees, I have learned this. I have a very bad posture usually, but I just took even yoga exercises so that I can sit for long amounts of time just like this without disturbance. I'm putting my body just on my skeleton like this. I hang it there and it rests there at peace. No pain, nothing. It just stays there. And I can see how much better I can concentrate as I'm chanting the rounds, and how easier it is if I'm with my mind present to go into it. I've learned this from the from Baladev's commentary to Vedanta Sutra, who says, where he quotes Sanskrit verses which say prayer and japa can only be done in a sitting position, sitasan, and other things he mentioned. It means sit straight, or to put it in Prabhupada's words, sit properly. I was myself a witness when Prabhupada corrected my brother, who sat like this, innocent as he was. It was in Amsterdam where Prabhupada was in his thunderbolt correction mood. He went up like this with his hands on his Vyasasan and said, "Don't sit like this, sit properly." And he said, then my brother was who? Hare Krishna. So, because posture has an effect on the mind, but the real effect of obeisances comes when you bring your mind to the practice, your speech, and your speech to the process practice, and not just the body. So now I would like to do this with you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Giri Govardhan, Giri Govardhan, Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan. Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Giri Govardhan.
So we will now use our mind by concentrating on the first meditation from Krishna Lila Stava on Giri Govardhan. If you have not really trained to use your mind, here is a simple practice. As you hear the sound of my voice, just go with your mind into the content. What does the voice say? See that the voice is almost like the letters strewn over a page which you want to decipher. You want to now decipher the contents in the sound. That means you will follow with your mind the sound like a calf which follows the cow for nourishment. At times I will request you to use your speech, and at another time I will request you to use your body in one of the four obeisances which you like to choose. Here comes your mind. O Giriraj, victory to you. O Krishna, you were aware of the sacrifice for Indra which was prepared. Then you went to your father and asked him for the purpose of this sacrifice. And you heard him explain the meaning of the sacrifice. You then introduced the theory of fruitive work. The second time I will again ask you to use your mind by following just the lines, the sound, as a calf follows the cow. Oh Krishna, you used all kinds of spurious arguments and finally stopped the sacrifice to Indra. Then you started the sacrifice for Govardhan Hill and the cows. I bow down to you. the third verse, we will just go with our mind into the contents. O Krishna, you explained how to worship the cows and the hill. And to inspire the cowherds with confidence that they should go ahead with the sacrifice, you, now use your mind, see it, what comes, you assumed a second huge form. You sat on the mountain of Giriraj in this huge form and claimed, Shailosmi, I'm the hill. And then you took the offerings provided for the sacrifice and devoured them. The calf can leave the cow for a moment. You don't need to concentrate now so much. I will tell you now something simple. Please relax your mind. If you have concentrated your mind, then please relax it now. When Giriraj took this form of, when Lord Krishna took this form of the huge, huge, huge form with turban and lotus eyes, just like him the form looked, he started to, Sanatana Goswami says, devour the offerings. That means his hands came and he took the mountains of food which were before him and just he ate them. At that time there was a little boy standing next to Krishna and holding Krishna's hands. A little Balaka, a Braj Balaka. And the boy said, Gopal, he eats so much, will there be something left for me? Balaka said, Krishna looked at his little friend and said, no, don't worry, don't worry. There was a lady, an elderly lady, who had heard that Krishna had diverted the sacrifice from Indra to Giriraj and who had become so enthusiastic that she went into her kitchen. She stayed somewhere, I heard, in Yavat, quite far from here. But she cooked, and as she cooked, she said, but I'm so old and fragile and immovable that I can't carry my offerings to Giriraj. At this moment, he saw, according to Jiva Goswami, she saw a mighty hand coming through her door frame on her stove and just taking the food and devouring it. Hare Krishna. I mean, she didn't see, well, she must have seen in her meditation, but the hand came and shwoop, took everything, and then Giriraj ate it. So there is now a last verse where I will request you to use your voice and your mind. Hope it's not a challenge to put the bows together. Usually when we talk, we should concentrate. Sometimes we don't do that. Especially I am with my mind already in other subjects, and then I lose my thread. I'm doing this. Or I'm talking prajalpa, where I really don't need to concentrate. I just let my emotions of envy and greed and talk, and don't use my spiritual discrimination. So, but here in this practice, we put mind and word and words together, concentrate. Gauravadana Shiro Ratna. O crown jewel of Govardhan. Gauravadana Mahatvada. You gave glory to Govardhan. O Krishna, you had the cowherds dress themselves up. Krishna, you had them prepare offerings of food. And you went with them around the hill. Yeah. You know, Krishna taught his Brijbasi associates what to do. So they respectfully offered the items which were meant for Indra to give to Govardhan. They saw him as a person because Krishna had helped them to see this. He had helped them by taking on this huge personal form. As we have discussed yesterday, for us, Krishna might help us to understand that Giriraj is a person by reciprocating with our prayers or by doing something with our consciousness as we are here in at his sacred hill and giving us some blissful insights in Krishna consciousness and helping us to look at our miseries and relativate them and say they are not so bad. I remember having great relief when I was in Mumbai in this hospital and I went to see our Jaipataka Maharaj, who was on the ventilator, and his lungs were moving up and down, and he was pale and struggling for life, a lonely general in a lonely battle for life. And I had my own pain, I call it politely my levitation pain. And then when I saw him, I thought, well, it's not so bad, my levitation pain. This is nothing in comparison. So Giriraj might help you also like this by saying, is it really so important? Is your story so absolutely fascinating, or is it just a repetition of the same old things? You might relativate. You might look from a new perspective and have a new insight. So, yes, Giriraj was at Krishna's time manifested as the Krishna form, and in our time, Giriraj is manifested as a person who reciprocates our intensity of devotion as we worship him or are mindful of him. Then, after some times, this is what the verse says, The cowherd men, according to Krishna's instruction, yoked the bulls before the cart and with joyful song they all circumambulated Giriraj Govardhan. This is, by the way, a process which I highly recommend for you when you are in the West. Make yourself familiar with Giriraj's topography by circumambulating him a few times while you're here, or one time. Make a few snapshots in your mind and then go on Govardhan Parikrama in Moscow or Berlin or London by just going in your mind along the Parikram trail and so on. And those of you who like to meditate even more, you can join the cowherd boys and the gopis, hear their songs in your mind's eye, blended with the benedictions of the brahmanas, may you be victorious, and so on and so forth. Okay. So now I will introduce the third practice. This was a little bit mind and speech. Now comes the third practice, offering obeisances. Again, for you, all of you, you can do a respectful greetings. You can do Ashtanga. You can do Panchanga Pranam or the Karashira Samyoga. These are options which you can do as we will And this obeisance is number 58. Again, I request you to repeat after me. The text is, it's like this. Crown jewel of Govardhan, who gave glory to Govardhan, you had the cowherds dress themselves up. Listen, you will need this for what you have to do now. The cowherds, men are all dressed up. You had them prepare offerings and food, and you had them circumambulate the hill. I recommend to you, because this was the last information which your mind caught, if your mind was at all here, a circumambulation of the Brajavasis of Govardhan. So keep that in your mind, and then you kindly offer your obeisances when I give you the sign. Now use your speech and your mind about what you have heard so far. Govardhana Shiroratna, Govardhana Mahatvada, Kritabhushashanabira, Kadita Triparikrama. Time for your obeisances. Giriraj Maharaja Ki. As you become a little bit familiar, and hopefully if I'm at all a teacher who is competent to sit here and explain something, as you offer the obeisances, the things which you have heard should come up in your heart and in your mind. Because you're now there, you're offering your obeisances, you have to put your mind into the practice. You put your speech into the practice, and you put also your body into the practice. Tomorrow we will train this with another thing. Don't worry. After you have done this for a few days, it will come very fluently, and you will have mind, speech, and body together, and something wonderful will happen. Now you are a little stiff still, and more than anything, you are tired as if you had an overnight flight. Why are you always so tired? It can have physical reasons, disinterest, or a dislocated mind. I will add the fourth reason, which is most probably true. We need to sleep sufficiently. Use the pauses which you have to rest, to do something else, to walk also. Some of you might do some practices or to talk with someone interesting about an interesting subject matter that your mind gets cooking. It's important that you are wakeful. So knowing this, I will now talk a little bit wakeful, very wakeful. I will now introduce to you the person whom we worship in Krishna Lila Stava. It's Lord Krishna. We are here in Vrindavan to establish our personal relationship with Krishna. This is why each one of us is here, to find my relationship with Krishna, or to go deeper in their relationship to Krishna. There are many, many very exalted statements. I know Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to once say, you can only take a bath in Radhakund when you are aware of your constitutional position as a servant of Srimati Radharani, then you really take a aprakrita, that is a non-material bath. So when you are in the dham, and you want your dham to be, your visit to the holy dham, you want it to be a spiritual experience, it's very important that you divest yourself from what Madhavananda Prabhu talked about this morning, these upadis, these designations. Here to the Holy Dham, come as a soul. Learn to come here as a soul and learn to stay here as a soul. Then you will be experiencing the spiritual quality of the Holy Dham. You know, this is totally opposed to a touristic visit. The tourist carries his false identity always with him. I'm a German, I'm an American, I'm a woman, I'm a man. And sees from this perspective. Like I remember when I was here 30 years ago, or longer, we met some professors of the Frankfurt University. I don't know if you know what is Frankfurt. It's a university town in Germany. I heard also a preparation is called Frankfurter, but I don't know this preparation myself. So these professors came, and they knew me, or I knew them, and I preached to them, and I still remember. They lamented to me, these toilets, how to use these toilets. Can't they make a proper German toilet here? And one professor said, I didn't even know how to enter the room because there is no German door handle. Have you seen the sliding things, you know? And another professor said, there is Schwarzbrot, please. That's a certain bread, you know, black bread, Schwarzbrot. And finally, they got so much on my nerves that I delivered to them a breakthrough experience. I said, let's go, I show you some temples. Yes, said one professor, but you have to always make sure, because I have a very acute problem with going to the toilet, that we are never 10 minutes, five or 3 minutes walking distance away from a toilet. I said, I make this 100% sure. So then we walked, and I took the Yamuna path, which was going into the wilderness with strong deliberation. Then the professor said, it comes, where's the toilet? Said, no, toilet very, very close here, we have lost the path, go into the bushes. The professor did so, and when he was finished, one Brijbasi came with a bottle of water. Now the professor, with his German mind, thought this was a congratulation drink. I knew it was for cleanliness. And I know that the water was not fit for German consumption. It had about 50 billion different bacteria which are causing severe causes of diarrhea. But I was so far away, the Brijbasi was motioning it, he should show his hands and he would clean it, and he was grabbing for the bottle, to wrestle it and to drink it he felt very proud. He had done something he had never done before, most probably. Then I screamed, don't drink it, and then ran, and I reached him in time. And even now, this professor remembers this very fondly and says, our friendship was established then, when you saved me. So I'm telling you this story, first of all, to make you laugh so that you are awake. But second of all, this is a little bit more philosophical. Because you cannot appreciate something on its own when you only come as a tourist. Therefore, we are saying, come here as a soul. Come here divested of your material identifications and turn as a soul free from these upadis which make your heart so hard that no Krishna enters. Turn as a soul to Krishna and to Giriraj, and you will make an experience. Vrindavan will open door after door for you. Prabhupada told us in the Bhagavad Gita, and I don't know, does anyone of you have a Bhagavad Gita handy here? Can you please open it, 1865? There, Srila Prabhupada gives us an orientation how our Krishna could look like. See, we have taken initiation in a certain school. It's our Gaudiya Sampradaya. And as the acharya of our school, Prabhupada defines how we actually worship Krishna. It's in Bhagavad Gita 1865. It's one of my favorite verses and purports. You know the text, but follow the voice of the text, please, as a calf follows the cow. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. And offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. What were the 4 points?
Always remember me.
You should think of Krishna, yes. Second point?
Become my devotee.
Yes.
Worship.
And offer your homage. I'm just checking if you follow the text. Thus you will come to me without fail. It's a promise given by Krishna, who feels very open-hearted at this point in the Gita towards Arjuna. Prabhupada says, everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. That's eye-to-eye contact. Ooh. Now Prabhupada says, how we should think of Krishna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon the four-armed form Narayan, who holds chank and chakra and so on. Someone shakes the head. It can't be. Why do you shake your head? Why can't it be? We must think of Krishna. Good, I'm just checking. Again, I will read it now the way it was here. It's said here. I want to wake you up, as you can see, but don't worry, I will soon become sweet in your language and tolerable. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna, the very form with two hands, carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. There are descriptions found of Krishna in the Brahma Sanghita and other literature. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. Now Prabhupada gets intense. Listen to this. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi forms as Vishnu, Narayan, Rama, Varaha, etc. But a devotee, he means a devotee of our orientation, but a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. Everyone, even the other forms of Vishnu, are attracted to this Krishna. spoke the Gita, the two-armed form, bluish form. And there's a pastime which I really wanted to share with you, a warm-up pastime. There was once a Brahmana in Dwaraka who lost 9 sons immediately upon his wife's giving birth. It was like that: the wife was in her labor pains, the sons came out, and before they could even touch the ground, they vanished in the air. The texts say that this refers to the subtle body and the thing, because the Brahmana placed once the dead corpse of one of his sons at the door of King Udrasena's court, and he sang a song of lamentation. This duplicitous, greedy enemy of Brahmanas, this so-called king, this unqualified ruler who just sits on a throne, immersed in sense pleasure, has caused my son's death by some discrepancies in the execution of his duties. And he began to accost Ugrasena, who was just smoldering on his throne. Ugrasena, no, I'm responsible as the king for what happens in the kingdom. And the fact that he loses son after son after son means I must have done something wrong. So when the 9th child died, Arjuna, who was at that time visiting Krishna and stayed and was at that time in the palace of Ugrasena, saw how the Brahmana came crying in desperation with his dead boy, placing it again on the steps of the palace and lamenting. Then Arjuna came out and said, "What's wrong here in Dwaraka? Is there no one here amongst these Kshatriyas who can stand up to a children thief?" And then Arjuna sarcastically said, "Maybe because they are all in Dwaraka, they are like idle Brahmanas who just eat and sleep, these so-called Kshatriyas. But now Arjuna is here with his bow." He said, "Brahmana, the next time your wife is expectant, call me and I will take care that you have your 10th son at least." So the Brahmana said, "Why do you talk so loosely, Arjuna? In the presence of Krishna, Pradyumna and Aniruddha, the sons have been stolen. What will you do? Are you better than Krishna, Arjuna and Pradyumna?" And Arjuna said, I'm not saying this, but I'm saying, call me and I will protect you." So then came the night where the wife was highly expectant. The Brahmana came, woke up Arjuna. Arjuna immediately came to the house and built a second house over the house. By his arrows, he built a protective armor which was impenetrable by mystics, Gandharvas, and anyone else Arjuna knew, could think of. But when the child was born, the child once cried, "Aah!" and then vanished in the air, disappeared. The Brahmana was totally enraged and said, "To hell with this liar, Arjuna. He is a braggart." Braggart means he who praises himself. He talks big, no substance. "He's a braggart." Arjuna remembered his promise which he had earlier made. He said, "Either I will protect your sons or I will kill myself and enter fire." So Arjuna thought, how could this happen? How could this happen? And who has the boy? Maybe Yamaraj has the death himself has the boy. So he went right by his own powers to some Yamani, that's the capital town of Yamaraj, and searched all over, couldn't find the boy. He went to Agni's town, to Soma's towns, to Vayu's towns, to Varuna's towns, and failed to find the boy. At this moment, Arjuna remembered his word. He began to establish a funeral pyre and was just about to enter the fire when Krishna stopped him and said, "Don't do this activity. I will show you who has taken the boys. You will be very delighted." Krishna then called for his chariot, which was drawn by four powerful horses. Who knows the names or some of the names of these powerful horses? No, that is not right. Yes, Mega Pushpa. What is his color? Cloud-like. Yes. Then I also don't know it. Balahaka. Yes, Balahaka. Then Shaibya, and the last is called Sugriva. And these horses, steaming with enthusiasm and power, approached, went up higher and higher and higher until they finally reached the layers covering the universe and charged right into the layers. But there they were overcome by a darkness, and they jumped up. You know, I don't know how it is called when the horses go on their two hind hooves. How do we call them? They rear up. And they couldn't proceed. Krishna smiled, called his Sudarshan Chakra, which arrived at the place, and begin to light up the path through the darkness of this world. It's covering, huh? Then they emerged in the Brahman effulgence, which hurt Arjuna's devotional eyes. Then they charged into an ocean which had beautiful waves, which vibrated with energy and sound. And they went into this ocean, which was not water or H2O like we know it. It's pure energy. And found a palace in the ocean, where on the dark blue Ananta Shesha, the multi-headed serpent, Mahavishnu reclined. Mahavishnu was bathed in a light which emanated from his own crown and the dangling earrings. Whenever you hear the description of the Lord, Krishna, Mahavishnu, everyone, you will always hear that they have earrings which dangle and which illuminate the cheeks, which is a particular wonderful meditation for devotees to meditate about the flashing cheeks of the Lord. Mahavishnu was attended by Nanda and Sunanda and other personal attendants, and the chakra was also there, and so on. Krishna saw Mahavishnu and offered him his obeisances, and Arjuna followed Krishna like he always did. Then Mahavishnu spoke to them. He had a voice full of solemn authority. It must have been very grave, in other words. And he said, "After liberating the demons, Krishna and Arjuna, please come back to me and give me the pleasure of your association. It was me who had stolen the sons of the Brahmana because I had a desire." The Mahavishnu spoke about secret desire, the minds of his in his God mind. He said, I wanted to see Krishna and Arjuna. I wanted to have the darshan. Now please take the sons back and bring them back. Arjuna was surprised. He looked at Krishna, and Krishna assented to this request by saying, Om. Arjuna must have also omed. Om, okay. And they took the sons. And as they returned the same route they had come, Arjuna was surprised. His first thought was, anything which anyone does is possible only by the mercy of Krishna. I have only come here by the mercy of Krishna. Wonderful. But then he thought, why did Mahavishnu have to steal the boys in order to see Krishna? Why could he not simply have come to Dwaraka to take his darshan? Why did he have to resort to a trick? And then he thought in his mind, it seems it's not so easy to go to Dwaraka, even for Mahavishnu. Only someone who is called by Krishna can come to his sacred dham. I want you to think about it. It's not so easy to go to Vrindavan. You can't go here by getting a ticket. You, the fact that you are here, sitting in the shady, under the shady roof of the pandal, struggling with your mind, is a sign that Krishna has called you here. You are very fortunate. Just wake up and see your fortune, and you are all right. It's so simple. Anyone who has reached the holy dham has been invited by Krishna. He's the dear servant of Krishna who has come here to the holy dham. Even Mahavishnu apparently cannot so easily come to the dham. This was Arjuna's bold thought. The second thought was, which Arjuna had, he thought, Mahavishnu wants to see Krishna, so he had to resort to a trick because he couldn't go on pilgrimage. He was maybe not invited by Krishna because Krishna didn't want him to the big Mahavishnu with Ananta Shesha in Dwaraka. So what was actually his trick? His trick actually was that he messed with the Brahmana. This is American slang. I've learned this. Let me say it in my previous knowledge of the English language. He had accosted a Brahmana and had stolen from a Brahmana. Now, Krishna is Go Brahmana Hitayacha, said Arjuna, thought Arjuna. He's the friend of the Brahmana. Nas, and when he saw his Brahmana was in trouble, he thought, I must personally do something, and that's why Krishna came here with me to Mahavishnu to bring the boys back. Now, as he was thinking this, he asked Krishna, are my thoughts okay? You are, to me, Hrishikesh. You are Hrishikesh. You know what's going on in my mind. Is it all right what I'm thinking creatively here? Mahavishnu couldn't come to Dwaraka because only if you sanction someone can he come to the Dharma. Second of all, you are the friend of the Brahmanas and you will always save a Brahmana when some misfortune strikes him. Then Krishna said out loud, yes, it was to see me that he, the Supreme Soul, came to steal these children. He, the Supreme Soul, or Mahavishnu, believed. Krishna will come only on a Brahmana's behalf. Only then he will come to see me, not otherwise. Krishna confirmed. Yes. Mahavishnu thought, Krishna loves the Brahmanas. Let me steal from the Brahmanas and Krishna will reclaim their property. Wonderful. Hare Krishna. So the reason why I'm telling you this is twofold. First of all, to tell you, Krishna is so wonderful, all the other expansions, including Mahavishnu, want to see him and have his darshan, which is proven by this wonderful story. From which chapter of the Bhagavatam? It's the 89th chapter of the Bhagavatam, if you want to read it in your own form. But now I will make a particularly sweet point, if I still have time. Until which time is this class going to go?
1 hour more.
Until 2 o'clock? 2:15. Amongst all the forms of Krishna, Braj Krishna, that is the Krishna who is here in Vrindavan, is the supreme form. It's that Krishna who climbs over the wall of Srimati Radharani's house in the midst of the night. That Krishna who then climbs a tree in Radharani's courtyard and in order to meet Radha will say, cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. Yavat is very close to Kukilvan, it's the forest of the cuckoos. And therefore Krishna takes on this disguised voice in order to deceive Yatila, who keeps an ever alert, watchful eye over Radharani. And simultaneously he wants to call Radha, who will hear him and feel him and recognize him in whatever disguised form Krishna comes. Even also in when he disguises his voice. So Radharani hears the cuckoo and knows, oh, my beloved Krishna has come. But also Yatila hears this extraordinary sweet cuckoo, which is just, you know, the cuckoo's voice becomes sweet when he eats mango buds in the spring. Then it becomes a little bit more sweet. Coo-coo. This is a little bit more sweet. Now I will tell it more sweeter. There are different variations of sweetness according to the amount of mango buds the cuckoo has swallowed. This is so sweet that it can't be just from the effect of mango buds, says Yatila. It must be something else. There's something is wrong. And I hope it's not, but maybe it's Krishna. So Yatila charges out of her room. Who's there? Who's there? Krishna, who has just come down from the tree, immediately panic-stricken, climbs up the tree and hides amongst the leaves of the tree. After some time, Yatila gets tired and goes back to sleep. Krishna again calls for Radha. And again Yatila wakes up. You know, the Supreme Brahman takes on a form in Vrindavan where he becomes the lover of his devotees and does everything to meet and please his devotees. This form of the most condensed manifestation of love is the supreme form. And I want to give you now a little pause of 7 minutes because I will prove that from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita and Sanatana Goswami's works. I feel it's very important as we enter this retreat to hear to work a little bit on our God concept. Who is the God of Braj? Who is the God whom we can meet here in Vrindavan? And Sanatana Goswami has described this so absolutely fascinating that I really wish you all to hear this. But because it's the time to make the Gayatri Mantra, to chant the Gayatri Mantra if you have the Gayatri Mantra. Therefore, I thought 7 minutes of Gayatri pause would be good. You might like to even move under a shade, but we will continue after 7 minutes. I have an extra line, so I will chant a little bit longer than you, therefore you have enough time to get back. But when we are finished, we will start. Let's do the Gayatri pause. During the Gayatri, those of you who chant the Gayatri, please start already practicing what you have learned now. Meditate on your Gayatri mantras. In other words, as you murmur the Gayatri mantra, that is, pronounce it very softly inside you, start, bring your mind to the syllables of the mantras. Please exercise this, because the more you exercise your mind during this seminar, the more you will become very, very able to do this powerful meditation practice of Krishna Lila Stava. So, Hare Krishna, we see each other in 7 minutes.